Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show which brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to the channel, please subscribe so you won't miss a new episode. I'm your host, Fritz Bussemaker, and today I'm delighted and privileged to have a conversation with Raphael Gordon. Raphael, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be a part of it.
Raphael is a global leadership advisor, entrepreneur, and author. He's recognized as one of the top international orators, author of 18 published books like 1, 2, 3, Leading Without Limits, and Skyscraper, and we're definitely going to talk about his latest book, Skyscraper, a global ambassador to the International Hub in Oslo, co-founder of Voices for Peace organization, global mentor and advisor to the Queen's Young Leaders Program, program in the United Kingdom, has won numerous awards and nominations on entrepreneurship and leadership. Raphael, you're based out of New York. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the introduction as well.
Now, Raphael, I'm going to jump straight in because one of the things I have learned from you reading upon what you do is you have a very simple message. Your location is not your destination.
Yes.
And can you explain where that message came from? How did you come to create that message? What's your life?
So in the beginning of my stages of trying to figure out what I wanted to do for my entire life, which is one, was to always aim for greatness in whatever it is that I do. I was realizing that through all the roller coaster moments of my life of trying to figure things out and get it right, I realized that where I am, you know, whether with my struggles in my personal life or just trying to achieve a goal, my location and where I was at, no matter how heavy the storm was, it wasn't going to be like that forever. And so I constantly would tell myself, your location, Ra, is not your destination. So where you are today is not where you're going to be at tomorrow when you make the decision not to be in that position. So it's pretty much my life message. I stand on it as my soapbox to just tell individuals all over the world, no matter what part of the life that they're walking, that no matter the circumstances, like, just remind yourself that it can get better, it will get better, and all you have to do is just keep pushing forward.
Now, in your case, it's not just only words, it can get better, because you actually come from a very rocky, bumpy background. And I
Correct.
Know
yeah.
you talk about this, you write this in your book, but can you share with the listeners a little bit of your background so people can really understand why you've chosen this simple message?
Yes. Yeah, so growing up, I had the privilege of knowing what it was like to live with my mother and my father and my three younger siblings. But as I was getting older, my parents separated, dealing with drug and alcohol abuse. My youngest brother went off to, over the years, went off to prison. And then I lost my second oldest brother. He was murdered. And so as I was getting older, I felt that I was losing all these individuals who were considered my family, and kind of felt like I was left by myself. And so over time, I became what you would call a village child. So where my mom wasn't there, there were women in the community who played my mother's role. Same thing as a father figure. And then those friends that I had that were males, they became like my brothers as well. And a lot of women became like my sisters. So, you know, wherever I went, there was someone that's always was encouraging me to keep going and don't let what you're dealing with affect you. But my growing up, you know, being homeless and, you know, dealing with the ills of life, because they do happen to many of us over time. Sometimes we have like these little quiet storms. But for me, you know, where I am today, I had to always remind myself that, listen, I came from a place of struggle, and having faith and having understanding that there are people who have who may not come from the same community as me, but they have a particular love that I can understand and I can connect with. And that's the reason why they said, I'm going to be your mentor, your big brother, your uncle. And these individuals became family, and these individuals came from all over the world. And so, coming from that background of losing my brothers and my parents, I had to find a way. I a lot of times statistically in the US, someone like myself coming from that environment was not supposed to make it past 18 or even 25 years old. It was either prison or death. And but still here I am. I'm still living. I'm smiling, full of joy, and pushing forward. And I think like that's the reason why I embody my life message of my location was not my destination.
Oliver, it does hit home when you put it into that context. Now, unfortunately, there are more people like you with a similar background. You've been able to. Now, are you okay if I would claim this as you have es escaped that environment?
Absolutely. And I think that my life has become another route, another blueprint for individuals who are trying to escape what I've probably experienced in the past. And, I never believe that an individual should always compare their struggle to somebody else's. But I do believe that it's important for you to recognize the multiple of blueprints, or should I say, individuals who've created a path for you to look at and say, hey, I can take this route to escape what I'm dealing with right now. So I look at myself as a blueprint of how to escape out of poverty or struggle or the things that may hinder you over time getting to where you're trying to get to.
Okay. Now you've also just proven that the phrase "it takes a village to raise a child" actually means something. But still, not everybody was able to do what you've done.
For sure.
Can you look in the mirror and assess, hey, who am I? How am I different? What was different for me that I had those mentors, as you're probably going to have friends and people you know in the neighborhood who did not get there. So what did you have which they did not have?
I think one of the things too is I had individuals who probably were looked down upon in the community as someone bad or just someone who wasn't considered successful in standards of society. But those individuals still push me to say, listen, I don't want you where I am. And so I need you to keep going. Then there was individuals who I just never knew who said, I believe in you, or there's something about you. And I want you to know that if no one ever told you that you are brilliant, you're a genius, and you're beautiful. And I think like that's the key. Sometimes it doesn't have to be, sometimes that the what you need, which is maybe just an encouragement, can come from strangers. And so if there's communities and there's pockets in the area which you walk upon and just have random individuals who have a mindset of just saying, that's a young person who needs some encouragement. I'm going to do that. That is somebody that I'm that child that received it. So I think like, having those individuals and also having, making a decision to be different than a lot of the individuals around me that were my age going through that struggle. I told myself I need to find mentors. I need to find someone that I can talk to. So I kind of I seeked out mentors. I seeked out individuals and I stayed attached to them. I followed them wherever they went. And I think that played a huge role as well. And just having someone who was consistent, like my grandmother, who was very consistent with loving on me no matter what. If I fell, she always says, don't worry, baby, get back up and do it again. And that's a grandmother's love. So, that's something that's special that I felt that I had. And a lot of people may not have the opportunity to experience that type of love, but I was blessed with that.
Okay, so it's also an example of you are the master of your own destiny, and to a large extent, you have to pick yourself up. Nobody's going to do that for you. You're going to get encouragement, but you have to take the action.
Correct. And I think when you do take the action, it causes other people to believe in you even more and also say, you know what? I see you working hard. I see you trying. So let me give you a little bit more push, or let me help you, or let me connect you to somebody, or let me give you an extra resource. But sometimes people won't, I think sometimes people will not give until they see that you're making your own strides first. So as I always say, you know, take two steps forward and you may see somebody down the line that's going to take four steps towards you to help you get to that next level.
Okay. Hey, that's your background. Now, when I was doing my research, I found not, okay, looking for Raphael Gordon, I found Ragor.
Yes.
As a brand, I mean, that's the personal brand. That's your personal brand. Now, is this a personal brand, Ragor, which you adopted given what you do right now? And we're going to cover that later. Or was that your street name, nickname, which you've always had?
Yeah, so I had, they were twins, and they were considered my publicist and manager.
Yeah.
And while I was in college, I was building out my speaking career and platform. And they used to call me Ragor. They was like, you know, we got to simplify your name. So it's like, you know, when it comes to marketing and branding, we got to keep it simple. And so they was like, why don't we just take the three letters of your first and last name, because that way it's always going to be connected to you. And so I kind of like the idea, and over time, you know, that's what I did. And, you know, I felt that when we did it, it just made sense. And so everything, it was so funny because once we accepted that as my tag name, my nickname, everything that I needed to develop my platform was available, you know, my .com, you know, social media. I was the only one that had that name. And I felt like that was good because that means that it will be easy for me to kind of develop and not have to struggle trying to, you know, pull things, trying to have it as my own. But it was my nickname. I got that while I was in college when I was starting my brand, my personal brand.
Okay. So you started your personal brand. You were in college. Now you just alluded to the fact you were already writing something because you've written 18 books.
Yeah.
Why? What started you?
And to this day, Fritz, I can't even, it's funny because I don't even, I never thought I'd even be writing three books, right? So I had a television deal that I ended up losing because I had got injured. And in the midst of me preparing to do my first season of the TV show here in the US, I met a young lady who was publishing books, and she was looking for her first major author that she wanted to do a lot of support behind. So when I went to Los Angeles to meet all the producers for my TV show, she's like, I can really help you. So I started writing when I met her. But what happened was she didn't have the financial stability to market my book. So she showed me how to start my own publishing house with global distribution. And she said, I'm going to help you publish that first book. And when I published it, it came out at the time where I made the front page of this newspaper in New Jersey called the Star Ledger. And it was also around the time, it was the same day as the Super Bowl, which is the big football championship. And I was on the front page of that, and my book came out the same week, and it just took off. And, you know, but I always felt like writing was therapeutic. So whether you as an expert or you're writing about self-development, you know, whatever that may be. But I think writing really, I felt at peace with that, especially with past backgrounds and everything, but also wanted to share my insight about business and the lessons I learned along the way. And because I was learning so much, I've started publishing every year.
Okay. But what did you start to write about? Because when you're at college, how can you have insights in business? I mean, knowing what you do right now, yes, but what was the first book you wrote and why did you write that?
Yeah, so my first book that I wrote was called You Won't Make It. And it was a short book about little insights about faith, prosperity, goals. And they were just very short. And these are just things that I felt was important that you needed to know if you wanted to be a great leader or entrepreneur, because I've always been an entrepreneur. Yep. I've always been a leader, at a young age. But writing that book, you know, I just felt that it was stuff that I was like words and lessons that I wanted to share. And that was my first book. And it really did. It really resonated with a lot of people.
OK. By the way, how did a lot of people have a desire to be a leader. But how
Yes.
did you recognize that you actually were one? And how does it
You
look?
know, yeah, and you know, it's funny that so in one of my books called Leading Without Limits, right? I talk about this a bit too. What I noticed was that individuals were asking me questions more than other people around me, and they were always tending to ask, where will I be at? And just for a lot of resources. And then there was moments where people were asking me to run for certain organization positions, and you know, leaders were coming to me for whether on the campus or even as I was getting older and you know, traveling a lot around the world. And that's when I kind of realized that, you know, I'm a leader in the community. When I would have host events, I was having hundreds of people coming out. There's to a point where before I graduated out of college, I had thousands of individuals on the college campus because I was hosting and creating these festivals and creating situations and events that helped to raise funds for organizations that were struggling with funding. So I felt that I could help them. And so when I would create these platforms or these events, thousands and hundreds of people would come out and it just blew my mind. And but that's when I realized that I was onto something much more than where I was at the moment.
Impressive. So
Thank you.
no, it is a great story because it's also a story which transforms from where you started off and what you're doing right now. So it's a story about how you're now helping others, well, to become leaders. And because I want to talk a little bit about your book, Skyscraper. You've done personal research about the effective work ethics of global leaders and influencers. Did you how did you do that, and what did you learn?
So, my method was to study the leaders that came before me, before the generations that are here now, and try to find the similarities that what I call the invisible strengths. What did each leader have in common with each other? And then also look at their ups and their downs. And what I noticed was that many of the leaders never had a smooth ride. They never had a smooth journey. And I realized at that moment to share with other leaders was that nothing is ever easy, especially when you're doing something for the greater good. You will have some pushback. So I started to study that, make notes of it. I started to watch a lot of documentaries. Even movies about these leaders that came before our time, whether they were considered bad leaders or good leaders, if they did harm to humanity or they provided peace and harmony to humanity, I watched every step that they were doing in all these different films. Once I did that, I made a decision for about a year or two to read autobiographies only. I didn't want to read anything from any new methods or new insights from new, or they would say new age leaders and entrepreneurs, because you know what's interesting is that in leadership, we will always great leaders will always lean on ancient wisdom, because there's always crumbs, there's always blueprints that were created, and they're all documented. So if you want to know where we should go, you always must first know where we came from, so that we can move to a better future. And I think leaders, that's what I learned about leadership, and also started to do the writing about it. And that was important to me to just be able to find that invisible string and to be able to understand, you know, what makes an effective leader and what their methods are.
Okay. Oh, by the way, why is the book called Skyscraper?
So Skyscraper, because it comes from my grandmother. So the last day that I was reading, I'm writing the book, I was trying to figure out, I never write the title out until I finish the book. And so I'm on the bus, my grandmother calls me. I usually tell her about the books that I'm writing, but this time I had no expectations. I didn't want no one to give me any ideas or suggestions. I just wanted to create a book where it can, anywhere in the world that it is, where it's at, someone will resonate with it. So my grandmother's on the phone with me and she goes, "Ra, I want you to know something. I'm so proud of you." This is a random statement, like what a grandmother would do. She goes, "Ra, I'm so proud of you," she said. "And you know, I lived through you because I stopped chasing my dreams, but you kept going with yours." So she said, "But never forget," she was like, "I'm your foundation and you're my skyscraper. And I want you to touch as high as you can to the heavens." And at that moment, Fritz, I said, "That's going to be the
That's it.
title, Skyscraper." And that was it. And so I dedicated that book to my grandmother. And I gave her the first copy, which is actually we had it recorded when I went to her home, and she opened up the package, and she just in tears and laughing and enjoying. But that's what skyscrapers are. Skyscrapers are leaders. They are individuals who go beyond the limits, who really push and say, you know, society says, hey, you should be a great businessman. You should be a great teacher or a great professor. But what happens, like they say as superheroes, what happens when you become more than what society tells you to be? What happens when you achieved all your goals and you're still alive? Do you revisit that, or do you make your goals bigger? And I think that's what skyscrapers do. Skyscrapers keep going, and they are always an amazing when you see how tall skyscrapers are. And that's what we are when you are a great leader, and when you are pushing, making sure your goals are being achieved in the world.
Are you able or willing to share your top three, top five skyscrapers? Who are your
Yeah.
mentors? Who are your the sources of inspiration?
Wow, so there's so many. Who can I start off with? So there is, and I never got a chance to meet him. I really wish I did, but to me, he's my mentor in spirit. The late great Nelson Mandela. To me, he is a phenomenal skyscraper. I think he is brilliant so much, and even studying his life, learned so much from him. I'm also a big fan of Reginald F. Lewis, who actually was the first, pretty much first African American billionaire in the United States. He passed away at a very in his early 50s, I believe. But just his brilliance and how he connected with people and how he gave back was such a big thing for me. And then Ray Chambers, who comes from my hometown. Ray Chambers is a dear friend and mentor of mine. And he's done so much in the world and been able to be a big support to me. I just really like, you know, these individuals who I've met along the way, they paved the way, whether they're here or not. And those have been my three who I've always quote, who I always talk about when I'm traveling. And I just kind of just, you know, I'm very thankful that these individuals, you know, found their purpose and also decided to take that walk and that leap. So those are my three like skyscrapers that I could say in my life that I really appreciated.
I like that. Now, the book is out. You're also traveling the world to talk about your book. Brought you to Oslo, for instance. I recognize. Tell us a little bit what happened there, because I saw something. I mean, I could not understand that. I was watching a video called Skyscraper Social. It was not what I expected, but what is it, and why did you do that?
So when I go and do my global tours for my book, specifically with Skyscraper, I have to be intentional. I think that's a very important two piece to state when it's dealing with branding and in particular, like you have to be intentional with your partnerships, what you put out in the world, and in regards to opportunities that you take, because every opportunity that you create and which you attract, you don't have to always take it. Because when you're doing good, there'll be a lot of opportunities, right? But with the Skyscraper Social, I wanted to make sure that every time I go into any city, any community around the world, that I could bring the collectives together. So in education, politics, business, even in the arts and even in sports, to bring everybody together as a collective, and also make sure I invite young people so that they can be around these individuals, because I want them to be influenced by the people that are in their country that's doing great in their industry. So when I bring everyone together, I like to highlight a lot of the things that they're doing that I admire, even though I'm not from their country, but I can see the work from afar. And I think that that's important as a global leader, is to make sure that I'm not trying to change a culture or change the city or the community. My goal is to be an asset to help uplift and to enhance what's already there. So I highlight leaders, I highlight the individuals in those communities, and be able to just show them love and be able to celebrate them for allowing me to be able to be embraced and to be accepted into their culture and their community.
Okay. Now you stated a couple of things, just a matter of factly. One thing which raises a big question in my head is, if you come from the States and go to Oslo and you just matter of fact say, "Oh, I'm going to bring all the leaders together," how can you do that when you are in New York and you have to cross a pond to get there? I mean, do you know all these leaders already, or do you you can't phone them? How? Why are they? Why would they come? How does that work?
So I have great partnerships with people. This is why partnerships is important as well.
Okay.
So even prior to coming out, again, I use all my tools. So social media is the beautiful thing. So Facebook, LinkedIn. And what I do is I seek them out. I have a great team of individuals. I have a brand man, a global brand manager who tends to play like this role. And so they reach out to individuals that's in their network in those particular cities and countries. And then we ask them to recommend or introduce me prior to me coming. And so they get a chance to learn about who I am before I even come to the country. And then if they are intrigued, if they feel like I would like to meet them or if you'd like to be involved, they would accept the invitation because the events that we have every time I do these tours, you have to be invited. So because if you're doing good in the community, many people will know who you are. And so my thing is for people to let us know who we should send an invite to. And that's how we bring them to the social, the Skyscraper Social. And one thing I can tell you is that when we did the one that you've seen in Oslo, at the Thief Hotel, which is in a beautiful, amazing hotel, people came to me and said, "We've never experienced something like this before. This is beautiful." And to hear that from who are now friends, who are my Norwegian friends, meant a big deal to me. That means that I did appreciate, I did the right things for them to say, "I really enjoy this, and this is something new that you that we can probably do for ourselves as well, even when you're not here."
Well done.
Thank you.
Now, that's the skyscraper social part. Is that different from the skyscraper tour, or is that the same thing?
It's a part of the tour. The tour pretty much is me. I get booked to go and do lectures and book signings and appearances. But the book plays a huge role in that. So people get a chance to read the book, and I share my thoughts about how to go beyond the limits, as a great leader and entrepreneur. And then from there's a lot of amazing Q&A events that are happening in panel discussions. So it's all a part, but at the end of my appearances, the last event or the last moment is the social, which is something of me saying thank you for allowing me to come here and tour in your city.
Okay, got that. Any countries on your wish list you want to visit next time?
Yeah, so there's many countries that I still have not touched yet. Of course, in the Middle East. I do want to come to Amsterdam. So that's been in the great conversation. Indonesia is a big one for me as well. Of course, I got to get to India. I got to get this. I got to get to the continent over there. And just kind of, and just kind of find, those are kind of like the main areas now that I've been thinking about just going to. Because again, I think it's important. And even like going to South Africa, because again, Nelson Mandela is a love of mine, as a leader, and I want to be able to visit, the hometowns and lands of many of these global leaders. So for me, I think it's important that, whatever country that accepts me to come and to empower, I'm always ecstatic for. So, I have many li on my list that I have not touched yet. And so, but all of them are my number one top choices.
Well, make it happen. Good leadership. Set yourself a goal. I'm going to go to South Africa by the end of this year. Why not?
So you're going?
No. That's what I would do if I were you. Just make a statement as a leader. I'm going by the end of this year.
Okay, by the end of this year, I'll be going to South Africa. I'm gonna
Great.
start planning it soon, ASAP.
Good. Okay. Now, a couple other last couple of things, Rafael. Now, next to writing books, talking about your books, you also took an initiative to do something about what's happening in the world by setting up Voices for World Peace.
Yes.
What is it, and why did you set that up?
So a friend of mine, Amir Amashek, who actually I met in Oslo, He's actually from Pakistan originally. So we had a conversation about the things that were happening in the world in countries that are dealing with a lot of conflict. And, you know, one thing about myself and the friends that I'm connected to is we're always about bringing peace into the world. And so, but I think what people have to always remember is that the majority of the world is made up of young people. And a lot of the times, young people are always getting the bad end of the stick when egos are involved with leaders who don't understand or realize that, like, young people suffer, the next generation suffers a lot because they feel like they're not a part of conversations. They're not being heard or being drowned out because of, you know, bad thoughts or, you know, I would say adults not getting along. And so we've figured the Voices for World Peace could be a platform to eradicate extremism, conflict in high conflict countries and communities, and also play as a platform for dialogue between countries as well as specifically with young people. And we felt that it's a platform that young people can use to voice about what's going on and concerns in their country, where other platforms that are just as major don't give a space or time for them. And so when we created this platform, I was highly surprised of how many young people and how many people flocked to be a part of our event. We did a huge concert and peace rally. We had over 1,000 individuals, a lot of young people. At the time, no Nobel Peace Prize recipient Malala, her dad became a part of our board, and he joined us and came to Oslo. And many of the ambassadors from various countries that were in Oslo came out to support as well. And there's a video about that showing that. So, you know, creating that platform and that organization is dear to me because we created it in Oslo, which is, I feel, is like the country of peace. The Peace Prize is there. There's a lot of peace dialogue there. So when you talk about branding, if peace had to be a brand for a country, I always say Norway would be on the top list.
Okay.
And so we figured that'd be the best way to kind of start the organization in a country like Norway.
That's actually a good solid reason, a sound reason. Brings me another question, though. Maybe devil's advocate here a bit, but there's so many initiatives out there on the world who aspire to do the same thing. How did you get that momentum to make your initiative so significant?
Yeah, I think it's just for me, I think personally, it's been partnerships and also understanding that we can highlight, I think our organization can highlight other organizations that believe in the same initiative. I think, and it's funny, I'm big on like superhero movies. So organizations that have similar missions should always connect like the Avengers. And they can come together and they can take on and battle whatever problems or solve the problems rather than just say battle them, but come up with a clear strategy as a collective to make sure solve the problem. And then once that's done, each organization should have a mission to sustain it in their communities, in their country. And when that's and when they ever if it anytime it falters is when everybody comes back together in partnership to make sure that it gets back to being sustainable. So yeah, so I think for me, the our initiative, I would say like it's not our saying ours is better than anybody else's, but we are just a reflection of many organizations that are trying to go for the same thing. And we support them. But what I know is that, you know, it's many different ways and many different blueprints to make sure everybody can be heard at the same time.
Yep. We'll definitely include the link to your initiative in the overview of this discussion. Hey,
Thank
couple of questions, Rafael, if I may, to end this great interview with you. I mean, I really enjoy talking to you.
Same.
What are the key milestones in your life? Are the three key milestones which has formed you who you are right now?
Yeah, so three that comes to mind first is attending the Nobel Peace Prize when Malala received it. That was a big one for me, because it reminded me of how far I've come, and Malala and myself come from the same generation in a sense, and to see what she and what she came out and been able to be a big light for many young people, our country and then around the world for young girls. And for me to be a young leader at the time, in the work that I was doing, but my tours, my books got me that far, my persistence. So for me, that was the first milestone. I think the second for me, which is sometimes we kind of forget to recognize as a big thing, is making the decision to be a changing agent in the world. I think that was an important part in my life, to the night that I sat down and told myself that from this point on, I want to be one of the greatest leaders and leadership advisors in the world. And if it takes my entire life to do so, I'm okay with that. And so, that decision allowed me to get opportunities and also be able to attract many, many people from around the world who really poured into me about what they were dealing with and how to be a good leader. And then the third milestone for me is when I spoke at Carnegie Hall, I sold out Carnegie Hall.
Wow.
From what I was told, I was the first orator to headline and sell out Carnegie Hall. And we did it during the UN in September when they have all the leaders that would come. So we did it during that week, which was a big deal. And so to see all these amazing faces, so much diversity, and on a week that was very, very spotlighted on because of the UN's events, was a big deal and a milestone for me. And it's to this moment is when one of my most beautiful moments for me in my career as a speaker, but leader and entrepreneur.
Those are definitely milestones to cherish, and almost each milestone is going to be an interview in its own, almost, because you've made me so curious. So firstly, we've run out of time, so I want to ask with one last question, if I may. What's your advice to young people who are just starting in life?
So my advice is to do what you love and understand that you are going to be young shorter than you will be an adult. So whatever you dream big. Never think that anything is impossible. There are times where people thought that there would be no such thing as people flying in the air. We have airplanes, so be mindful that it takes curiosity, it takes passion, it takes a sense of resilience, and a deep down understanding that you must really believe in yourself, that you can do it. And no matter what anybody says, go for it. Your location is not your destination. And again, be clear about what you want to do in the world. Do something for yourself, but make sure that whatever you do for yourself, it also going to be able to be a positive impact on others around you. And if you can be able to do these things, I think you'll be superb in your walk through life, and you'll do some amazing things. So, stay focused, be curious about life, make as many friends as possible around the world, maximize your resources, but more importantly, have a circle of advisors and mentors that can always support you, pour into you. And that way, that's how you become great on your path.
Ladies and gentlemen, Raphael Gordon Ragor, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.